Good evening, all. This is Kilo 2, Kilo Echo, Yankee, KTY, and this is the TechNet on Limark. Dick, who's our usual MC here on the net, we're a little under the weather this week, and so will not be able to join us. If you'd like to sign into the TechNet, just give me your call letters and your name and a confirming yes or no if you have a question. So, with any further ado, this is KTY listening. Go ahead, please.
And here we are, Rich, and yes.
This is KC2QYW, and listening.
W2OSR, just listening.
Ace report, good evening, Mal.
W2PNJ, yes. N2KDN, yes.
KC2QYW.
Rich, with a yes. KC2OYU, with a no. N2OSR, with a no. W2PNJ, I believe it is, with a yes. And K2KEN, with a yes. Did I miss anyone?
KC2QYW.
KC2QY. Oh, sorry, I wrote it. QYW, sorry. Do you have a yes or no, QYW?
Yeah, that's a yes. QYW.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else?
Did you pick me up, Mal, WS2N?
Okay, well, WS2N. I guess Paul will give us a report on our space division a little later on. Okay, I guess we got a few to get started with here. N2EO, Rich, how you doing? This is K2KEY with the Limark TechNet.
How you doing, Mel? K2KEY, Limark TechNet, N2EO. Question to the net and then a general comment. Fairly short question. Mel, you know I'm using open wireline to feed a 80-meter dipole with a tuner. What I've got is coax going behind the wall and up the ceiling. And then I go into what's called a W9INN ballon. 4-to-1 ballon to go from coax to transfer to open wire line. Now that open wire line is touching some of the joists in the ceiling. This past week I fired up the amplifier, about 1,300 watts output, and I smelled something burning. Didn't smell like it was coming from the tuner. It actually smelled like wood burning. And then I unkeyed the amp, the smell seemed to pick up and then die away. So I don't know. Question now, is there any chance those joists are dry? I would think they're good insulators. Is it possible to set fire to them with the open wire line? Back to you, Mel.
Well, you know, wood has always been used for many years by amateur radio operators way back when they used to make their own insulators. They used to take a piece of wood, boil it, paraffin, and make insulators for outside. And the problem is with wood. Wood is not a perfect insulator at times. In fact, what could happen inside our house, many times wood picks up carbon that's a byproduct of your heating system, and it coats the wood of the beams. And at times also other household chemicals and things can change the composite of the wood. So the wood can become somewhat conductive. And of course, there's also possibility there's nails in the wood, pieces, slivers of metal, and wouldn't be impossible. Somebody, you know, drove a nail in right below the surface that you didn't see. And there's all kinds of possibilities with wood. The idea is with open wire feeding is try to keep it away from everything as much as possible. chances are with wood that, you know, you're not going to have a fire, but it's always, you know, like I say, an indirect possibility because of the composite of the wood. Wood may have been coated with a chemical sometime. Maybe it was some kind of paint that was put on that had a high lead content. Now, remember, all the old houses, painting with paint that had lead was, you know, commonplace. And we've heard a lot about that in the last few years, about children being exposed to lead contamination from walls that were painted with lead and how much it'll cost you to remove. So it's always a possibility. Ideally, I guess the best thing to do is get some pieces of porcelain or plexiglass and use them, make you know, some supports where you feel that it may have been cooking the wood, just to stand off the open wire feeders. I've used the open wire feeders very successfully, but I could mention last week what I do. I got them in a clear outside where they come in through the wall of the house. They're coming in through two porcelain feed-throughs, which I made from these ignition systems that I use in oil burner systems. And when it comes into the other side of the wall inside, I then continue with the ladder line, but suspend it in air right directly to the Johnson kilowatt matchbox, right to the porcelain feed-throughs on the Johnson kilowatt matchbox. So I guess a word of caution, especially if you're going to run power somewhere in that over the kilowatt, you know, be careful, Rich, over.
Okay, Mel, very good. All right, well, what I'm going to do is move that W9 iron and balun outside and extend the coax that goes to it another 5 or 6 feet. I guess what you're saying is air on the side of caution. The reason I haven't done it is can't do it myself until I get that hip replaced. And I did have a comment to the net. I'm going to be going in for the hip surgery. I've decided to do it. I have to see the surgeon a week from Thursday. We're going to set up a date. Don't actually have a date yet. But if there's anybody out there who has had hip replacement at Glen Cove Hospital, which is also now called North Shore Hospital of Glen Cove, I'd appreciate hearing about your experiences there. You can reach me at m2eo@awrl.net. I'm also good in the Limark log, rather than the Limark roster. And I'll give you my phone number, because it's listed in the Limark roster anyway. It's 718-352-4867. I'll be interested in sharing any experiences people have had with hip replacement at North Shore Hospital of Glen Cove. Back to that, and to, you know, pick up the next customer there, Mel.
Okay, thank you, Rich, and the best of luck to you. I hope it all works out for the best. And if anybody on frequency can make a comment about Rich's request, if they've ever had the procedure, familiar with the procedure, involved with that hospital. Is anyone on frequency to make a comment? Go ahead, please.
N2KBN.
KN2KBN is a King Kilo Bravo Norway. 2KBN. I'm going to put your call down here. Please start out with your name and then your comment, over.
Hi, Mel. It's Kaj, Charlie Oscar, Delta, Gulf Echo, and the call is November 2, Kilo, Delta, November. And just so, Rich, if you got any questions, so you know, I'm a paramedic. I can't explain things as much as a doctor, but I am familiar with Glen Cove. It's a pretty good hospital. It's not a problem. If that's where your surgeon suggests, you're probably okay. And that's also, they specialize in rehab, rehabilitation. So they're very up to speed with rehabilitation, which is more the most important thing to be done after hip surgery. And when you got the date, you know, let us know. There's a few of us in Glen Cove. Certainly, if I get a chance, I'll try to drop by and break your chops as you're recovering, if you don't mind. And but if you got any medical questions, I can translate the medical into English for you very easily. That's what I do as a paramedic quite often. Back to neck control now.
Okay, go ahead, Rich. Make your comment.
Okay, guys, very good. We worked you on the morning show. I appreciate that. And, you know, any and all are welcome. The more the merrier. Like I say, I haven't set a date yet. I see the surgeon on the 8th just to set things up. But, we'll do this more off the net. I don't want to take up too much net time with this. But I appreciate the offer, Coach. And you can email me into eo@arrl.net or call me 718-352-4867. Or we'll catch you on the morning show or in the afternoon. Back to that, and to EO. Thanks, pal.
Okay, Rich, I'd just say you ask here on line, Mark, and I think we can accommodate everybody one way or the other. Thank you, Koch, also. I hope you can help out our good friend, Rich. Good guy. Let's see. Next, we've had KC2QYW. Please, what is your name, and how can we help you? Over.
Yes, hi. My name is Joe. This is KC2QYW. At this point, I don't have any tech questions, but I have one question. When I missed the HamFest out there. When is the next HamFest? Over.
When is the next HamFest? Let's see, local HamFest. Anybody know when the next local HamFest? I guess it won't be till somewhere, I believe, around June. Anybody can give a definitive answer on that? Over.
The next one, I don't know how local it is, because I don't know where he is, but the next one is Parsippany, New Jersey, Saturday morning. I believe it's March 3rd or 4th, I'm not sure of the date, but this coming Saturday, and to all you.
Okay, thank you. And I guess you can check in QST. There's a section about HamFest, and they give you usually a couple of months notice of when the next HamFest is and where it is. Or you can go, I guess, to W1AW. Website, I'm sure it's posted on there also. Joe, go ahead.
Oh, okay, thank you. I think I was talking about the one, I'm sorry, I should have said the Mymark, I think it's called, out on Long Island. And this is Joe from Westchester County, Harrison, New York. This is KC2QYW. Back to you.
Okay, Joe. Yeah, they have a must-see. I believe Mymark runs one. If I'm not mistaken, the next one, I think they have one in June, and then I believe another one in around September. Am I correct? Anybody want to correct me on frequency?
WBQ, you came over.
Okay, WB2CUK. I should know your handle. Go ahead, please.
Name is Bill, Love. I think June 10th is their next HamFest. Out at Bryanfield College. I didn't get the date from September on. I think June 10th, they were passing out flyers today. And yeah, the Parsippany show is this Saturday, the 3rd. I think it's exit 46 on Route 80 or 47. It's on the Baldwin Road, which is off of Route 46. And there is info on the ARRL website. If anybody wants to field a question on antennas, I have one.
Okay, Bill. Put you on the list here, WB2CUK, and there it is, June 10th, there'll be Mymark at the college. Thank you, Bill. Anybody else want to make any comments about HamFest and all before we go on? Okay, thank you for your comments, Joe and Bill. W2, I believe it's OSR, what is your name and how can we help you?
Thank you, Mel. This is W2OSR. I don't have any questions tonight. I'll let you go on to the next person.
Okay, what is your name, please?
It's Bob. You may remember me as KC2MWA, Boy Scout guy that was down at Boy Bennett.
Oh, okay, Bob. Yes, yes, yes. Okay, yes, we did shake hands. Thank you, Bob, for joining us here. All right, the next station that joined us here was W2PNJ, I believe it is. Can we help you with something? Over.
Good evening, Mal. This is Bob, W2PNJ. I'm putting in an amplifier into my system, and I want to, for a little compactness, put some right-angle connectors between the transceiver and the amp, you know, the PL259 right-angle. I'm just concerned about insertion loss or arcing, or what do you recommend? Because I think the bending radius would be too tight if I, you know, use it without the connector. I'd like to get some comment on that. What kind of insertion loss or VSWR problem I may have? We're running, you know, strictly low band.
N2EO.
Okay, go ahead, Rich.
Okay, now, yeah, I use those extensively. There's nothing wrong with them on HF, VHF, UHF. You'd want to use a type N connector with a right angle N. But on HF, there's no problem. The only suggestion I would make is get a good brand. Don't use these cheap Japanese connectors. They fall apart. They're no good for high power. You want to use a good Amphenol connector, which you can get from AES or HRO or any other distributor. When you call them up, just tell them you want Amphenol and insist on it. Back to you, Mel.
No, Roger. You're 100% right, Rich. Yeah, Bob, I've used, as Rich just mentioned, many, many right-angle connectors. Of course, it's the best way to go because you do take the strain off, you know, the possibility of breaking the connector off the back of the rig, you know, if you're trying to shove the thing back towards the wall and the cable sticking out, it can put a lot of pressure on the chassis-mounted connector. And so you will relieve a lot of the strain by using right-angle connectors. Now, you asked me about loss. I have gone through this many times. Good quality connector, there isn't any measurable loss at all. I have never seen any problem with any of the PL259 series connectors on HF with losses when it comes to things like the right angle or just the connector itself, the PL259. Everything, if you're especially using a PL259 connectors, if you're going to order them, make sure you get the solder type, not crimp type, so there's these twist-on type. They're no good. Not for RF service. You want good solder-on connectors when it comes to the 259 that sit on the coax. And as Rich just said, also Amphenol right-angle connectors, also of that quality, and you'll have no problem. And as he just said, you call HRO up and speak to our friend Bob there. His name is Bob also. At HRO, he'll know exactly what you're looking for, Bob. And you can use many as you need. No problem whatsoever. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Unfortunately, I picked two up at the at the ham fest today. They got a Teflon dielectric, and that's what made me pick them up. Some of them had, in some of the vendors, it looked like a brown phenolic or brown Bakelite. But these, this vendor had them, they were, the dielectric is Teflon. Maybe I should check, make sure there's no DC short between center and ground.
Oh, you know, when you pick up at a ham fest or something like that, you never know where they came from. They're not a brand name on them. Possible, yes. We used to judge the quality of coax by the color of the dielectric. And when you stripped open a piece of coax, you saw the dielectric was brownish color where it normally should have been white. You'd take that piece of coax and just toss it. So whether or not that normal color of the dielectric in those connectors was originally brown, I can't answer that to you. And it's not worth, if you're buying an amplifier and putting good money into rigs that are costing, in the case, scrimping on a connector for a couple of dollars, I just can't see it. Enough. It just doesn't make financial sense any which way. First of all, if there's any kind of problem come up there, you're going to be scratching your head initially and say, what the heck is going on here? Why is the needle flickering at times and doing things and all? And I hate to say that if all that comes about and you have problems and it's traced down to a connector that you got in a bargain, you can well imagine how you're going to feel, Bob, over.
Okay, good. Thanks for the advice. I'm certainly going to take it up. Question, you mentioned HRO. What store is Bob located in? Who do you normally call? Because he seems to, he's done, business with the Limar members.
He's very, very nice fellow to deal with, and he'll make sure you steer you right and not try to talk you into something that you don't need or not quality. It's at the Delaware store, Bob, over.
Their phone number is 1-800-644-4476. And Toledo said that. I deal with them all the time.
Okay, thanks, ERO. This is Bob at W2BNJ. Thank you, guys. I'll be on the side listening. And I hope Dick feels much better. We miss him.
Thank you. Yes, Dick is listening, so I'm sure he's got a little bit of a cold there and virus and, you know, going around, so just let him take it easy. His voice is a little bit hard to talk with that kind of raspiness in his voice. All right, now let's see. We went through every, let's see. N2KDN, Koch, do you want to make any other, ask any other questions or statements, over?
Yes, I did have a question regarding ground systems.
Go ahead.
When I start to do it after this call, if I run, I know I've been reading up on stuff as far as basically it seems like run as many radials as you can or so inclined as you can, as long as you can, seems to be the general gist. If I run into a short area, would putting length of, say, chicken wire down to help on the shorter length of the radial and interconnect it with any radials that might be going toward that area to connect it, would that help, hinder, or have no effect?
Okay, now, story about radials. Many of the hands that really into putting up verticals will start out with a chicken wire grid initially. Now, there is all kinds of chicken wire. It's the stuff that's just twisted together, and there's stuff that is soldered or a welded type material. You don't want stuff that's just twisted together, you know, that's in a grid of some sort, because in earth, it'll begin to give you problems. It'll just be not good quality contact between, you know, different little cubics of the wire. Now, as far as radials go down, it's been a misnomer that you have to think you have to stretch out the wires, you know, exactly in a nice, neat pattern, that you also have to have them cut precisely to a frequency. This is a misnomer. You can take the wires and make them, twist them, turn them, make them into all kinds of different shapes. You can put down chicken wire. You can put down whatever you want. And in fact, with the vertical antenna, you will find that as you add more radials, you will see that the resistance of the antenna will change. And of course, you'd like to eventually approach that magic number of approximately around 36 ohms resistive on the vertical, which in most cases takes a lot of radials. But if you put down, at least it's had a lot of success with verticals with about 12 radials. So I would say nothing less than 4 radials. I've even gotten by, I have my portable vertical that I take out the field and out to the park, and I just spread out 4 radials. And I use it on the antenna on 10, 15, and 20. It's a multi-band, home-band vertical. And with the four radials, I get by and make decent contacts and everything with it. So at the home base, when I've had verticals, like I said, I usually go to try to get a number more radials down. And if I can't get them straight, I bend them, I twist them in every which way, and it'll work. In other words, the idea is just to get down as much wire as is practical. Koch, over.
Okay, great, Mel. Thanks. I appreciate it. Yeah, from what I've been reading, I've been picking up on that. The exact length doesn't matter. You can wrap it around, like, where I plan on doing it. I hope to eventually put up an inverted L for 160 is my hope, and maybe also use that ground system if I do any other vertical work. I think I'm interested in playing around with experimenting with antennas and stuff. So my thought, like, where my optimum place, I think, for the antenna placement, I also have my driveway right near there. So I know I can take the wire and wrap it around it as much as possible, but I didn't know on the really short runs if the chicken wire would help or if just laying wire around would be fine. You know, the extra effort of ripping up the sod and laying down the chicken wire isn't going to get me as much as just laying down more runs of plain old wire, then I'm not going to bother with the extra work.
Hey, well, I've had some experience in that, also with the lawn. And, I've even used similar to like what you say, inverted L, and I used actually part of the, one of the parts of the radio system. I use the chain link fence and just hook up everything, you know, but the more the merrier, as they say. Now, as far as laying wire down on the lawn, if you lay down, say, like number 22 wire and just leave it there, especially if you lay it down just before the winter and you leave it there by usually right after the during the growing season and all, what happens is it'll migrate into the ground. I've used that method. I've also threaded wires. I made a little gadget up that I actually threaded the wire underneath the ground, underneath the grass. In other words, I actually threaded it through the grass low enough that the lawnmower didn't pick it up. So, but once you get it down there, if you get it down, like I say, thread it through the grass, you know, pat it down and creep along like I did, and I patted it down as best as I could down to the lower level of the grass around the growing season or just during the winter time and all. It migrates, the wire will migrate and disappear into the ground. It just disappears. In fact, originally we moved in here, my underground sprinkler system was above ground. I just laid out hoses, hose line, and to the different sprinkler heads. And over the years, the hose line, or the plastic line that we ran to the springs, migrated, also disappeared. Bit by bit, it sunk away into the ground and disappeared. So this radio will do the same thing, though. Getting wet through the rains and everything, the sprinkling and all, will just make it disappear into the soil, constantly. So lay down quite a bit of it over.
Okay, great, thanks. And that's your last comment. Just actually opened up a quick question. I think, from what I understand, the conductor size doesn't really matter too much, so I could save a few bucks by going with 22 instead of 16, 14, or 12 gauge wire, correct?
Oh, of course. Yeah, use 22. You can buy, you know, use old telephone wire, anything. It's not critical in any which way. That's in fact what I did. I picked up my radials originally. I wanted to, have a lot of wire, and of course, like most hams, we like to scrounge any which way we can. And I picked up long lengths of these telephone lines, you know, packaged together, number 22s, dozens and dozens of 22s packaged together in a. And I just slipped the sleeve open. I just held one end in a vise and just ran down with a razor, slid it open, pulled out all this wire for nothing, really, and separated it off and just laid it down as radials. And, boy, I sure got a lot of radials out of one hunk of scrap wire, Conchal.
Okay, great, Mel. Thanks a lot. Yeah, actually, I'm looking at all the spare wire I got now, or extra, or whatever. So I might not have to buy too much then. Thank you very much. Appreciate the help as always. And to KPM.
Okay, roger, roger. Yeah, a lot of times the simplicity of doing things is amazing. That, you know, you don't have to read books where they come up with wired, exotic wire and all to do these type of setups when you can use common, you know, things that literally that you can get as trash. Okay, so thank you, Koch. If we have any further problems, please join us. Next, WB2CUK. Bill, what can we do for you? Go ahead, please.
I just pulled into my driveway. The wife's anxious to get out of the car. Take the next one in line and put me in about 5 minutes, and I'll be back.
Okay, Bill, take your time. WS2N, Paul, what you been doing? My 75-meter friend also. We do get on 75 meters. So, Paul, nice to talk to you here on also 2 meters and 75. WS2N, go ahead, please.
Okay, good evening, Mel. Yeah, okay, well, I don't have a question. I do have a space report if you want to do that at this time. I didn't make last week on 80 meters. I will make it, though, next week. Can we give a space report?
Okay, do you want to ask a question first or space report? Up to you, Paul.
No, I didn't have a tech question this evening. If I think of something later, maybe.
Okay, then what's doing when out of space? What can we expect? We don't hear much about, of course, the news a couple of weeks ago was about this runaway astronaut, female astronaut, no less. And I was wondering, I guess that just sort of quieted down by the NASA. But I guess there is some more legitimate space news. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, other news has taken over. That's good. Yeah, well, last I heard, she pleaded innocence. So, but, you know, that's buried now with all this other crazy news that they have on TV lately, which is a good thing for the space program anyway. There's so many things coming up. Mal, there's, like, you know, for the rest of this year, I know there's, like, over 20 launches, mostly from the United States, of course, some from Russia and some from the European Space Agency, I think one from China. But many different missions coming up. You've got, like, 5 space shuttle missions yet to go up for the remainder of the year. That will be the big news anyway, the next space shuttle mission will probably be March, middle of March, March 16th, and they'll be bringing up another trust segment, for the starboard side. You know, they've got the port side pretty well built. This is another one of these rotating assemblages, you know, with the DC to DC big rollers inside to transfer the current from the solar arrays, 240-foot by 40-foot solar arrays, two of them on each end through this spinning mechanism, which has to spin, you know, once every hour and a half to pick up the sun's rays more directly. So that's the big contraption that will be going up in March. But, you know, there's 4 other missions down the road. The next one that you'll probably hear more about on the TV and the news will be the STS-118 mission. That's the end of June. It's another assembly flight. You know, they're going to be bringing up another starboard section, they call it the S5 trust section, and it will also contain the laboratory, which they've been, you know, they call it Space Lab. They've brought that up maybe 20 different times on different missions. What that amounts to is it adds more space to the living space to the space shuttle when they're flying up there. But the main reason you'll probably hear it on the news is that will be the launch teacher, Barbara Morgan. Barbara Morgan was the stand-in or backup astronaut to Krista McCullough back in 1985 when they had the teacher in space program that was pushed so much. And as you remember, Challenger blew up 73 seconds after launch and killed seven astronauts, her being one of them. Well, the teacher in space program was officially never dropped, and this Barbara Morgan, who's since 20 years ago, has never given up her flight status. Every year she trains, passes tests to keep up her job as an astronaut. So she will be going up. So it's ironic that, you know, she was the stand-in, and sure enough, she'll probably get a chance to go up. That will be going to the International Space Station. And I'm sure she'll be transmitting down to all the different schools and doing what Krista McCullough originally planned on doing. So that should be good. There's many other missions that will be going up, STS missions. You've got the Columbus module in a future shuttle mission, which is another gigantic livable module. You know, it's 40 foot long by 15 foot diameter. Module that will be attached, built by the European Space Agency. We'll both be going up later this year. So they're really putting a rush on the building of the space station. Before that, they have another node connector. A node is it's like a big, it's like a connecting module. Like if you take a dice, you throw it on a craps table, there's six different points of that you can tie into. There's node one that's already up there, and that's where all these different modules and things, trusses are attached to. There'll now be another node where they can attach, more different things. And one of the things that they'll be attaching will be the Columbus module, as well as the Kaibo module. That's another livable laboratory that is being built by Japan that will also be sent up by the space shuttle at the end of the year, and that's a module it's got a gigantic like platform outside of the module in space all the time, and experiments will take place outside the that particular module. You can put like four people in this module if you want, and float around and utilize the space. It also has a comes with its own robotic arm attached to it, where you can use the robotic arm to maneuver things out on this platform that's exposed to space. So quite a few things with space shuttles going up. You've got the Dawn mission that'll be going up in June. Dawn is an unmanned spacecraft, and that's going to be the first one to be able to orbit two different asteroids. It'll go around one. It'll go around another one eventually. It's going to, Cirrus is the biggest asteroid that we know of. That's one that will orbit, and then it's going to go on to another one. So quite a few missions to look forward to and talk about on the net as we go on. I was going to talk about the Mars programs, how good that's doing, but I think I'm going to wind up getting a little long-winded here, but I'll just say shortly that the two Mars rovers are doing very good. Three of our four spacecraft orbiting Mars are still operating. One has failed recently, and all doing well. And later on this year, in August, they're going to launch another one to Mars, which will land on the North Pole. And they call that the Phoenix mission. And I think they're eventually going to have a microphone on that. They planned on doing that years ago, to actually hear the wind on Mars. Hopefully they keep that going. When that one spacecraft that was supposed to land on the South Pole had failed, the Mars Polar Lander, crashed into the planet. This is like a replacement for that. The only difference is, of course, it's going to the North Pole. It's not going to have wheels on it. It's just going to land. It's going to dig a trench into the ice and the soil and look for organic materials and so on and so forth. A lot of interesting future missions coming up as well that will land on Mars now. So the Mars Science Laboratory 2 years from now. That should be really, really be good. That'll be a rover, much more advanced rover. Rovers like the rovers that are up there now, as big as a golf cart. This one's going to go up, you know, as big as a Humvee. Back to you, Mel. K2KY, WS2N.
Okay, Paul, thank you. This is K2KY. Yeah, fine business. The space station, how much more really does it, is there a point where they're going to say it's completed? How many different sections more do they contemplate? Because I know that the finite life of the space shuttle is only a number of years off, so how much more are they contemplating to the space station before they consider it complete, Paul, over?
Well, I guess 2010 will probably be the completion date. They fell way behind. It should be completed this year. The Columbia accident really put them way behind. And even before that, they were getting off maybe two missions, the top three missions a year. And now, look, they're pushing five. We just had one, five more. They're going to be pushing these left and right until the year 2010. There's a lot of components yet that have to be brought up. But these if they get this far with this group, they'll be in pretty good shape. So I would say probably 2009, and my guess is completion. I'm thinking what else they need to put on there. You know, I have a chart somewhere which shows the rest of the building of it, and this pretty much is the main things. If they get all of this up this year, maybe this year or next year, what's that, 2007, I don't know, maybe they could be done by 2008, I'll have to check. I don't think there's that many more habitats or truss sections after this, so I think they're going to make it. They're going to have a transfer vehicle, automatic transfer vehicle being launched from South America this year up to the International Space Station. A huge thing to bring up equipment and supplies, and eventually they'll be up to a six-man crew instead of the three-person crew that they have now. So I'd say after this year they're probably, you know, maybe 80% complete. Back to you, Mel, WS1.
Okay, very good, Paul. You brought up also about the launching of this satellite that's going to observe asteroids. Now, there's been talk that there is one, two asteroids that could be a questionable collision with the Earth in a number of years off. Is this supposedly going to be observing asteroids? Is this the reason for the launch, to observe these asteroids that may be menace to the Earth in the future? Is this the reason for the mission, over?
Yeah, you're talking about the Apophis. They call that Apophis. I think it's 2028. I don't know, maybe 2028, I think it's supposed to be coming close to Earth. And, they would like to investigate these things better and be better at getting near to them and landing on them. And, you know, we've already landed on one asteroid already years ago with the NEO spacecraft, and that thing landed on Eros, an asteroid. It wasn't planned on landing originally when they did it, but they did do it, and they would like to learn the capabilities of doing this. In the future, right now there's nothing on the horizon that says that anything's going to hit us imminently, but this is not the main goal. The main goal is, of course, to orbit these two and take pictures detect the minerals and things that are on it, and learn about the different asteroids. It's really a scientific mission, Mel. That should be interesting. Delta II rocket will be launching that from Cape Canaveral. and we'll be looking forward to that. That's called the Dawn mission. You'll see that in the papers probably in June, and I think the second or third week of June. Back to you, Mel.
Okay, Percy, UK is back. Okay, Bill, we'll get to you in 1 minute. yeah, talk about meteors, asteroids, and things of that sort. As I said, joke, I combed the beach here, right on the beach here, down the block. The weather is nice. I'm out there with my metal locator, and everybody looks at me and says, "Did you find a treasure?" And all, I tell them I'm trying to find a certain stone. I'd love to find a piece of meteor and just have as something to say, well, I got something that was, you know, part of maybe another planet at one time. And it would be something to just to have, you know, as a conversation piece. Okay, and you mentioned Mars, the land, and one of them is going to carry a microphone on it. what are they exactly are they planning to hear with a live microphone on the surface of Mars, Paul, over?
Yeah, the Mars Polar Lander had one on it, but that one crashed into the planet. Yeah, they actually want to listen to the wind, any breeze or wind that goes by. So it would have been the first transmission from any heavenly body, you know. Of course, you couldn't do it from the moon. There was no atmosphere there. But they can do it on Mars. And whether there's a scientific, I guarantee there's a scientific value for this somewhere along the line, Mel. But hopefully they do it on this. I was checking, looking on the internet to see if they kept that on this lander. But I don't know. You know, a lot of things are similar, but it's quite a different lander. I mean, this thing's gonna come down on the ice, like I said, on the North Pole. But before it does, it's gonna have pictures, beautiful pictures from the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter. That's now the last Mars orbiter put into orbit, and that thing can take pictures. That thing has seen the picture of the rover riding around. That's how small of a resolution this camera is, and it's going to have that benefit of this high-rise camera from the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter taking pictures of the North Pole of Mars, and then it will be able to give a precise landing. So when this thing comes down, it's not using airbags. They call this the Phoenix mission. When this thing comes down, no airbags, it's going to come down with retro rockets and you know, parachute naturally, and retro rockets, and then land there, and it's going to have an arm on it. It's going to dig into the soil and all. It does have solar panels for power, round solar panels that come out, like a piece of fire, all these different pieces in there. They're going to unfold. It's going to come out like a fan after it lands. Nice little project that they plan on sending. I think there's more planned eventually. This will be the first of what they call the Scout Group, and it happens to be called Phoenix, you know, rising out of the ashes of the Mars Polar Lander. Back to you there, Mel.
Okay. Okay. I was wondering what they expected to hear with the sort of tongue-in-cheek hear the wind on Mars. What about the, you know, taking pictures? Sure.
Pictures will be taken. Pictures. And then they have chemistry lab on board, and they're going to look for in the ice that's under the soil, or even on the soil, they're going to look for like carbon and things like that. You know, into the biology of what's in the soil. Similar to, but more advanced than, the two Viking landers that landed in 1976, one on one side of the planet, one on the other, in a relatively dry, boring area of the planet, which they had bio detectors on board as well. But of course, this is 2007, and I'm sure this is going to be a high-pollutant deal back in
Okay, Paul, thank you. Yes, one more thing. What about this talk that there are faces carved into the surface of Mars? Are they going to resolve this with the cameras? Over.
No. That's long been resolved. What do they call that? Cydonia? I think the area is called Cydonia. That's long been solved with the Mars Global Surveyor when I first got there in 1997. The latest of the advanced spacecraft to orbit that planet. That was followed by the Mars Odyssey and also the European Space Agency Mars Express, and now the United States again with this gigantic, most powerful orbiting spacecraft, the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter. And even with the Mars Global Survey, you know, they took pictures of this thing in all kinds of different directions. It's a lighting effect that gave them the original pictures from the Mariner 4 that first took the picture, Mariner 9 that went into orbit. Mariner 9 had to wait now, I don't know, months before it could take pictures because Mars was in a global sandstorm at the time. And that's where those first pictures came down, and they put it out. And almost like a joke, hey, look at this. But, you know, people took it seriously. But, all those pictures, when you look at them in different light and everything, I've seen dozens of pictures of this area. You know what? It's like the UFO thing. You know, no matter how many times people say show that there's no way, there's no actual evidence or proof of any of it, you're going to have somebody that's going to say, no, I want to believe that. You know, it is fun believing that. Back to you now.
Yeah, Roger, that's why I brought it up. I got a kick out of that. Faces on Mars, and I'm trying to tell us something. Okay, thank you very much, Paul.